Hey, my name is Natalie Peters, and I'm here on June 13th, 1994, with Mr. Robert Whitney. And Mr. Whitney, how did your family end up in Harford County?
Well, we were in the ice business years ago. My father used to cut ice on the river, and the Whitney family is well known in Havre de Grace. We go back for many years. My father was here. He died young, but he was here for 50 years. And my mother was born down on the proving ground till the government took it over, and then we came to Havre de Grace. So I've been here 73 years, and as I say, I was on the City Council for 20 years, 1954 to 1964, 1972 to 1982. I served on the Planning Board for 30 years. I was a lifetime member of the Fire Company for 15 years. I served on the 4th of July Committee for possibly 15 years. I was a member of the Havre de Grace Baptist Church for 20 years. I was on the board. I was chairman of the board several times. And this pretty well covers most of the little things that
I'd like to try and sort of start at the beginning. Do you remember the ice business that your father had?
Well, actually, like I said, my father cut ice on the river, and then they stored it in houses, I say houses, sheds, where you use sawdust and stuff, and they cut it in the wintertime, of course, stored it, and then delivered it in the summertime. So I, like I say, the Whitney name goes way back. As a matter of fact, I worked up to the ice plant myself, and we delivered around town. We had a competitor, Abbott Brothers, was in the ice business too. But this goes way, way back. And as far as the number of years, I don't know, but I know that the name, I suppose the name was around, my land's 100 years in the ice business.
Do you remember any early stories about collecting ice on the river and delivering it?
No, other than what I told you about storing it in sawdust houses and things like that. But I did know my father used to talk about 10 cents an hour and all that kind of stuff. He never made any money. Just a tough racket.
And did you go to school in the area?
Yeah, I attended local school.
Tell me about that.
That goes back to 1938. And then I worked for Mr. Gallagher for 9 years. I worked for a man in the Texas oil business for 9 years.
And who was that?
W.P. Robinson was the man that had the agency. And that I started there, and as I say, I worked there 9 years, and then I went to work for Mr. Gallagher for 9 years.
And what did you do for Mr. Gallagher?
I was in the office. I used to do office work, clerical work. And then I left there and I went to Mr. Morgan in Aberdeen. I worked there 19 years. And he had his son-in-law, or grandson rather, went into stationery business, and then I worked in the stationery business for 10 years. And then, knowing Mr. Morgan for so long, after I went out of the stationery business, or quit the stationery business, then he had a grandson that was in the oil business, and I've been working part-time for him, and I've been there since, probably 5 years. But it pretty well covers most of the things that I did as far as working around. But I guess the biggest thing that we had when I was on the town board was the sewage plant. We had, we had quite a time about that. Seems like we, at different times, we had all people that really were hostile. I mean, they came and they didn't want, we were trying to put the plant downtown, and they didn't want it downtown, and eventually it wound up out at the racetrack. They had made a deal with the state government, and they put it out there. But that was really something else. Then we had the industrial park, and the it seemed like we got quite a few people that came there, and Soar, and well, there was any number of them that came back there to the industrial park. But I remember, you know, going way back, even the racetrack, that was when we were kids, we used to go to the racetrack, and we hung around there once in a while and worked out there once in a while.
Doing what?
Well, working in the grandstand for different people that came there. They, but we seen a lot of activity.
What do you remember most about the racetrack?
Well, I mean, they had meets usually twice a year, and they would come here, and of course they brought people here from all over, mostly Philadelphia and Wilmington, Baltimore, Washington. They sent the trains in here. There's days they run the steam trains in. They unloaded the people, and then they moved them on down, and then the steam engines would sit down, and they would stay there until the race meeting was over, and then they would go back up and pick their people up and take off. But it used to put, they'd have 20,000 people out there.
Excuse me, would you have some cold drink?
No, thanks.
Yeah. Excuse me, wait a minute. I want to take a ride.
Okay, so we're at the racetrack.
Racetrack, yeah. We were talking about them coming twice a year.
Can you describe the racetrack to me? I've never seen it.
It was out where the National Guard, right. The National Guard took over that area later on. But the racetrack was, as I said, there was people that came, and people rented out rooms, and they did the hotels. The hotels mm-hmm. were full, and it was quite a thing. They were here, you like maybe 10, 15 days, twice a year, and then they would, they only had one way to get out of town. You had to go over the bridge, and it was a double-decker bridge, so it created a lot of traffic. And the meet, as I said, usually about 20,000 people on a Saturday. It was quite a busy place. And then they used to have state troopers. They stayed here, and they rode motorcycles. And the meet was over at the end of the day, they would bring this money wagon in. And then they had maybe six or eight of these motorcycle cops would come into the bank at Harvard and Grace, and then they would line up around the bank with shotguns and everything, trying to take the money out of the mm-hmm. truck. So it was real busy. Yeah. And then I think in 1950 is when they closed, and then that's when the National Guard took it over. And it was a great thing. I think the National Guard was really good because you could always depend on it for anything. If you wanted a big piece of heavy equipment or anything like that, why, they were always available. So, and then the different industrial places came. The city run the water and sewer out there, and it was quite a bunch.
And how old were you when you used to go out and work at the?
I think probably 10 or 12. And we would work for those different concessionaries. They would sell ice cream in the race in the stands and things like that.
You'd carry the ice cream into the stands?
Yeah, they had regular boxes, and you would ice it down with that dry ice, and then you would take off and go up in the stand. And sometimes when you would, in the stand, you could sit there and almost sell the box, because people would pass it on down to the other people, and then they'd be passing the money back up to you, so you just stand there and unnoticed.
Do you remember how much the ice cream sold for?
Lord, about that time, about 10 cents. Then apples and things like that, they had, they were like 10. The other thing, Brian's Orchard up here, used to hire summer help, and people would go up there and work. In those days, you made about 25 cents an hour. And
Picking fruit?
Yeah, picking fruit, peaches, and carrying ladders all day long, and it was quite a thing. The end of the week, there wasn't no Social Security, nothing like that. They just hand you whatever you had coming to you, and that was it. But in those days, too, you could go downtown, buy a dress shirt for a dollar, buy a pair of Tom McGain shoes for $3.30, and things, I mean, you could buy different things that were very cheap. Quart of milk, 10 cents, and loaf of bread, same thing. Down to bakery, pies, and nickel. Which,
what bakery? Do you remember
Gulf's,
the bakery?
Gulf Bakery. They're still in business. Yeah, they're.
What are the biggest changes you've seen here in this area?
Well, in average, it's the number of people. All the building up on Chapel Road, and the pencil farm, and this been a lot of building. And then you got Meadowvale, Susquehanna Hills. There's been a pretty good bit of expansion. The I-95, making it easy for people to, if they go to Baltimore or any place like that.
Did you used to go to Baltimore before 95?
Oh yeah.
And how did you do that?
I'll go down Route 40 or Route 1, but taking 30, 35 minutes you were down there, mm-hmm. usually.
What were those roads like back in the...
Well, they were the kind of roads that you had to be very careful of, because you had to pass, you know, just single road. And it was just two-way traffic. But, you know, to go to Baltimore on the old route, Route 40 and Route 7 now, was quite a thing.
Do you remember the Mon Pah Railroad?
Yeah, I remember that.
Can you tell me about
it
that?
It run through, it went up through, it came up to Bel Air, and then it went on from there on up to Delta, Whiteford. And I remember we used to serve Stacey Milling Company in Whiteford. And the Mon Pah Railroad is what used to serve them, and they would take them cars out of there. They produced granules for roofing, and it was quite a big business. But the thing that always fascinated me with that place was that the people that worked there, they always looked like they were, their faces were almost black, you know, from the material that they produced. So it was. Then in Maryland, green marble, that was just up the road from that Delta, and they produced that marble, which I think the railroad served them too. And then as far on up in Pennsylvania, I don't know how far up Pennsylvania they did go, but I do remember coming up to Bel Air a lot, and Whiteford, and Cardiff, and Delta. So.
What else do you remember about the early days here in this area when you were a young man and a child?
Well, of course, the river. We all
go
fishing. Yeah, fishing. All the wharfs, the Abbott Wharf, the Gulf Wharf. We had a wharf down there where the Tidewater Grill is. They called it, that was the Vandiver Wharf. And then Stockholm, and then Penn's Beach. We had the beach here in those years. Had two dumps, and a dump uptown that floated down. All the cans and stuff would go down. We swam in all of it. And I don't know if anybody ever gets sick. And then we down to City Park and the odd fish.
Tell me about fishing on the river.
Well, really, we would just go like line fishing mostly. But we did have a lot of people that went for big hauls. I had an uncle that used to have seines, and he fished them by the tons. He would get tons of fish, and then he sold them down on the wharf there behind the Legion. That was big business, fishing business. The herring, the shad, the rock, and they caught them. There was no limit to anything then. You could just do whatever you wanted to, as far as fishing, line fishing. We went for bass, and then we had people that had rowboats, and some people had motorboats, and then we would go to Betterton, and then we would go crabbing at Betterton, then we'd go crabbing at Still Pond, and we'd go crabbing at St. Michael's, and so all of that was quite a thing. But I've seen the time when you would take crabs, they would be so plentiful that a lot of times we would catch them and put them in a boat, and maybe they would die before we got a chance to cook them because of the heat. Down by the park, you could walk along the shore for soft crabs, and all you had to do was take a basket, put the basket on your belt, and let it float, and then you could dip all the soft crabs that you could catch all the way, walk clear down to Tidings Park, or not Tidings Park, but Tidings Landing, which from the park to Tidings Landing. And my, you could just catch a bushel basket and everything, soft crabs. And now you can't catch one. So it's changed an awful lot.
And these are the blue crabs.
Well, that was a regular soft crab.
Right.
Yeah, the other was the hard crab, yeah. Oh, I've seen a time when you would catch the hard crabs on the fishing line. In other words, they would be that far up in the bay. And then we'd go, my uncle had a boat. We had quite a time with that thing. We would go down on the flats, swim all day long, and water ski, and all kinds of things like that, and take a big lunch or take picnics and all kinds. We had a good time in those days.
Do you remember any stories from that time, being out on the boat or fishing?
Well, we remember a lot of times we would go out there, and a lot of times the tide would go out, and we'd have trouble getting away from landing. Yeah, that was on the flats. Yeah, you actually would, if you stayed too long, you would really get yourself in a pickle. You wouldn't be able to get away. You kid? Yeah, they were good old days. They really were. Up at the Beano Bridge, up at the quarry. I remember the people that worked at the quarry. I lived in the houses up at the quarry, and they don't do that anymore. I think different people have. But they had an awful lot of people around here that worked at Standard Lime and Stone Company. And most of the people lived right up here in the 800 block of Juniata Street, and the 700 and 800 block of Erie Street. Most of those people all worked up at the quarry. And that was a big thing, too, in those days. A lot of dynamite and things like that, you know.
They used the dynamite for?
Stone. Yeah, they would take them and dynamite the stone, and then after they'd do that, then they'd run it through the crusher. And I think most of the stone in those days was sold to the Baldwin, Ohio Railroad. They came up there and took the stone.
So what other businesses in the area do you remember other than the quarry?
Well, I told you about the ice business and the quarry business, and then we had the fruit business. And
the fruit?
Well, that was
the orchard.
That was the orchard, yeah. And the fishing. Of course, that was all around here. You know, they have people around here, they made a living out of that, just fishing.
Who did they sell the fish to?
Well, going back to my uncle, they used to take get in trucks. They would take the trucks to, and they put water in the trucks and try to keep the fish alive, and they would take them to Philadelphia. And they sold them up there. Everything they had, they would sell up there. Oh, and then they had people years ago, too, I remember, who did ducking. They would, they actually would ship ducks on the train. And they had a man in town here by the name of Beck, and he had been around here for years and years, and he would ship ducks. And then...
live ducks? Or?
No. They would be dead, but they would shoot. They'd have big hauls of them, and then they would ship them.
These were ducks. They went on hunting.
Yeah,
and
then they would put
them in trucks. Yeah.
Then they had a tugboat that used to have down on the end of Hanover's Wharf, and they had a gentleman by the name of Mr. Galloway, and they were hired by the railroad to man that tugboat for just the sole purpose of taking boats and stuff through the draw. So that man would spend hours after hours down there on that wharf waiting for somebody to come along that needed some assistance with that tugboat. But he worked there for many years. And in the meantime, they sold gasoline to boats. And then came along with the marina, you know, you're familiar with probably the Tidewater Marina. That's a big deal down there now. They are pretty well in the business. And then, between that and the Yacht Basin, is most of where all of the boats are stored in everything.
What do you remember about the Aberdeen Proving Grounds being built?
Of course, they got a mini acre down there, and all I know is my uncle worked down there, my brother-in-law worked down there. As I said, my mother lived down there years ago. They had a farm down there, and then the government came along and gradually bought all that land. And another thing I remember is the Pusoosie Island, the Bayou downtown. When the racetrack would come, they would stay there. Also, the duckers, when they would come from Philadelphia and all, they would stay at the hotel. Then they had people downtown there that would take them out on these duck blinds, and they would kill these ducks and everything. That was quite a sport in those days, years ago. And then Sousa Island down that the government now owns was, I think, privately owned by some people. I think the Whitneys and Pierpont Morgans owned the island. And they had a regular display, a museum on that island years ago before the government bought it. And we used to go down and we used to serve gas down there to those people, and they would take it on barges across to the island and then unload it and bring it back, and I had it all in barrels. And then they farmed that island. Sousa Island was farmed. So that was a great thing. These people would come out of Philadelphia and New York and different places, and then gone, and they had this island where they stayed on this island. But later on, the government bought that island. But the Proving Ground, I mean, hurt a lot of people. That's a big operation, Proving Ground. But I knew a lot of people that lived down there, worked down there. And then, of course, back in the war days, that was a boom town because they had Camp Rodman and different ones down there, the barracks, and they brought them here, and the Proving Ground, and then the Bainbridge, you know, they had as many as 30,000 people over in Bainbridge during the war, and they trained the people over there, and the barracks, and all the drill halls, and it was quite a thing.
What else do you remember about the war times?
Well, wartime was, I wasn't in the service myself, but I remember how they had gas rationing, how you used to go to people's homes, and they would have to have coupons before you could be able to give them any product. And if they didn't have the coupons, they couldn't get the product. Then they had the rationing board out in what is J.P. Chevrolet in Aberdeen now. And if you wanted gasoline, additional gasoline, you had to go to the board and you had to explain why you needed it. And then they would have to make a decision whether they were going to give it to you or not. So it was quite... And tires, the same way. You couldn't get a tire for your car unless you went to the rationing board. So things were pretty well under control.
You were delivering gasoline during the summer?
Yeah. And those days, we went all over Harper County, Cecil County. I remember we would serve a lot of different people that were hauling war material into the proving grounds. And they, the new car carriers and people like that, they hauled us, the guns and all this stuff into the proving grounds.
You were driving a truck with cans of gasoline, or was it a tanker truck?
Tanker truck. Mm-hmm.
What do you remember most about that?
Well, just delivering service stations. In other words, we had service stations, probably had 50 service stations, farmers and everything all around the country and around the county, rather, over in Cecil County. And you would haul gasoline to the farmer, gasoline to the service stations. And there's been a lot of change on that too. I remember in Aberdeen, they used to have a big service station on the corner out there, Texaco, and now that's where the Aberdeen commissioners have their office. That's all been gone, all been torn down. And around Harry Gates itself, as I say, there's been any number of changes that I've seen. I think for the better. I think up on the hill here now we have all the new houses. And they're up in a price range where I think people, I don't know whether they can afford them or not, but anyhow, they're buying them. So we'll wait and see, I guess, on that. But I think most of them are handled.
Tell me about some more of those changes that you've seen.
The downtown Haverty Grace years ago was considered a good many businesses. You could buy most anything that you wanted downtown. But then it just got, when you get the shopping centers and you got the mall in Bel Air and all, I mean, it kind of killed it all.
What do you remember about going downtown when you were?
Well, like I say, you could buy most anything you wanted downtown.
Did you go down to the films and things too?
Or the movies? Oh yeah, I landed every picture. Yeah, every change. He changed about three times a week, and then we would get in with those cereals. You know, those Saturday cereals. And Lord, you'd go back the next week to see what's going to happen and keep going. So that was a great thing too. But in downtown Stockholm's, they had Stockholm's Can House, and they had Silver's Can House. They had, I told you about the ice business. But they, you could smell the ketchup and the different tomato products and all when they were canning. And then in the, let's see, Silver's, they used to can fish too. You can tomatoes in the summertime, can fish in the fall. So that was a great thing. Tillman Packing Company. And I told you about the beach. Down there where the Citizen Nursing Home was, they called that the log pond.
Mm-hmm.
And the log pond consisted of an area, they say, years ago where they brought logs in, and they would wait for a certain time, and then they would take those logs out of there after they were there a good while. And anyhow, that's where the Citizen Nursing Home.
What were the logs for?
They floated down the river from up above the river. And of course, that was before the Conowingo Dam and all was there. So.
And these logs were used in building and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they would take the logs and take them away from here and saw them up, of course.
So they pull them out of the river right
there?
Yeah,
sawmill. Take them out of there. Something else I was going to try to get in there. Oh, the Citizen Nursing Home and where the condominiums are down there now, that was all considered a log pond. Mm-hmm. And then the Penn's Beach, we had the beach there. We had the Yacht Club. The Yacht Club is where the lighthouse was.
What do you remember about the lighthouse? The lead runs out. It should start recording now. And you were saying about the lighthouse.
Yeah. Well, it's been there, as I said, many years ago. But right alongside of that was what they call a Harbor Creek Yacht Club. And they had any number of people that stored their boats down there. And, of course, they had a real classy lighthouse. Or not lighthouse, but yacht club. And then they had the boat races, and they would bring these great big ships up and sit out in front of the yacht club, and then the boat races would go down and around and then come back up to the bridge, and you could go out on the bridge, stand on the bridge and watch these boats race.
And when was that?
That goes, my lands, I guess that was back in the 40s. Yeah. But it was a great thing. They had those regattas every year, and it was a big thing. It used to bring quite a few people.
Who owned these yachts?
Well, we had any number of people in town. I can remember Mr. Baines, Mr. Hibditch, Mr. Vanover. They all had boats that they stored at the yacht club. And it wasn't protected too much, you know. I mean, it just seemed like it was right out in the open, but it was right in that general area where the lighthouse was.
Do you remember any big storms, hurricanes?
Yeah, 72. We had that hurricane Hazel, and it flooded a lot of around here. We have what we call Lily Run, and Lily Run flooded Juniata Street, and you couldn't even, like this street here, you couldn't even get down this street because it was flooded out with water. And it done quite a bit of damage, but they had, at that time, they were threatening to, somebody told me to blow a hole in the Conowingo Dam. And then 40 Posit, you know, is always flooded out. Done a lot of damage over there, people's houses, cellars. But it was a bad storm.
Do you remember any hurricanes before that?
No, nothing before that. I don't remember anything before that.
What do you remember about the Conowingo Dam being built?
Well, in 1926, I think it was, they put a railroad right down Juniata Street that run all the way to the Conowingo Dam. And in those days, you know, they didn't have these big trucks. So everything that went to the Conowingo Dam had to come in the what we call the old line, and then go. They bought dinkies down here, and they took them along the railroad tracks, and the railroad tracks run clear to the Conowingo Dam. And that's how they got all the transformers and all their wool products and everything, tank cars, that they had to haul it up along the river and run all the way up to the Conway Dam. So that was real big. And then they claimed that they had people that worked up there that actually lost their life. They would fall into cement while they were pouring the cement, and they would keep right on pouring, and they just no way they could get them. I've heard that many times. They have talked. Yeah. Well, it's a big thing. They run them dinkies. I've seen a time when they run as many as 25, 30 cars right straight up the railroad tracks along the river. Mm-hmm. It was a big job.
You say they ran dinkies?
Yeah.
Tell me what a dinky is.
Well, a little old dinky rather than a full-size engine. It was a smaller, yeah, dinky. We always call them dinky. Mm-hmm. But they would run these things. When they came down here to get ready to haul any of those big cars up there, they'd have to clean out the railroad tracks in the center downtown on Junior Avenue Street.
Clean them out?
Uh-huh. They would have to clean the tracks out so they could get the cars down the tracks.
What would accumulate in the tracks?
Well, the dirt and everything would get in there, and then it would make the thing rise up so it wouldn't be able to pull.
Because these roads were still dirt then?
Well, no, they weren't dirt then. No, they just would fill up, and then they'd have to clean out between the tracks in order to get the cars to stay on. And then they came along and they took, I think they had made a deal with the city some way, and then when it was all over, but then they decided that they would take the tracks out and blacktop the road, so that's what they did. But the tracks still run part of the way up there, and then they were even talking before they took the tracks out. They were talking about making some kind of a sightseeing deal on going up to the dam, which would have been really good. That was a good idea. But they never did ever get to that.
Did building the dam bring a lot of jobs to the area?
Yeah, at that time, yeah, it did. There was a lot of people worked up there. They came here, I think Stone Webster or something, big contractors came here from out of town. But they had a lot of people that stayed around here, roomed around here.
How else did building the dam affect the community here?
Well, I don't know of any particular changes other than it supplies electric to Philadelphia and I think Cecil County. But other than around here, no particular changes. Because Balmer Gas and Electric does everything around here.
What do you remember about the Depression in Haverty Grace?
The Depression in Haverty Grace, well, nobody had a job. People that worked on the railroad were laid off. The only thing that I can remember on that, like I say, people just didn't have no work at all. And they didn't do like they do today. I mean, they didn't have any money, they didn't have anything. They didn't have anything to turn to. There wasn't no Social Security, wasn't anything like that. So it was just tough going.
So what did people do?
Well, they started WPA projects and things like that, you know, and people worked for $10, $12 a week. And it was really bad, real bad. And then sometimes, during the railroad and all, these people worked on the railroad. It was a long time before they ever would get to go back to work. Some were brakemen, some were engineers, some worked on the tracks. But they just didn't have any work.
How did they survive?
Well, you know, they just had to make out the best they could because they didn't have any money and they didn't have any of these welfare programs. And today, I mean, you know, the government takes care of a lot of people, but in those days, they didn't take care of you. If you didn't have it, you didn't have it, period. That was it. It was really tough.
What was your family doing then?
Well, my father worked on the railroad and he was lucky. he kept a job. He was able to. And then we had trucks that we used to haul different things for people and move people and things like that. So we always made out okay. But I can remember my father used to talk about people that didn't have a job and nothing to turn to.
Absolutely. Do you remember any of those stories that your father told?
Well, I know over in Perryville, you know, it's kind of a central place for people around here. But mostly everybody over there worked for the railroad. And as I said, they just didn't have any. There was no way that they could come up with anything. They'd fish or they would do anything, you know, to make a living. But things were really, really tough.
So did they just fish for food sometimes?
Yeah, fish for food or fish to sell to the fish houses or things like that, you know. But, you know, we're talking, in those days, we're talking about, I remember Mr. Coakley telling me that they had people that in the wintertime would skate from Fort Deposit to Haverty Grace to go to work in the can house for 10 cents an hour. 10 cents an hour. And then he said that was true.
They'd go across the frozen
water. Yeah, skate on the frozen river in order to make it. Mm.
What else do you remember about being a young person in this area?
Well, we were like anybody else. We were just poor people, so to speak. I mean, we never had a whole lot of money, but we always were able to make a living somehow. That pretty well takes care of the younger days. We're just honored as hell, just like everybody else. But between the racetrack and the fishing and the swimming and things like that, well, that's pretty well what we wound up doing. Playing ball.
Do you remember any specific stories about any of that?
No, other than we had ball teams, and we would downtown. They had a team named Pioneers, and we had a team uptown called Mohawks. And we would play one another about every other day, and that's how we would pretty well entertain ourselves. But we would take them. I can remember over here at Mitchell's, we had fields. We would take a field and grade it off in order to make a baseball diamond out of it, just for something to do, in order to play.
Which team did you play for?
Mohawk. Uh-huh.
And who usually won?
Well, we weren't that close on the score, but we had people like with sponsors. Mr. Atkinson, fella used to run the store, he sponsored the Mohawks, and fellow by the name of Murray Lauder, he sponsored the Pioneers. So we just played ball. That's what we did.
Would people come and watch the games?
Yeah, we had, then a lot of times we just sand a lot of stuff, you know. But we had a lot of fun.
What else do you remember about the changes of Haverty Grayson?
Well, downtown, I can remember, of course, the Colonial Hotel, you know, I told you about the racetrack. They used to come there. Now that's a nursing home. And then the nursing home itself, downtown, I think the county was in on that. And I remember when I was on the town board, we leased that out somehow, I think for a dollar, to the county, and then they put the nursing home down there. And then the other thing was the Lafayette Hotel is now the American Legion. The Chesapeake Hotel is now the Crazy Swede, So all these changes have, and then the Bayou, it's of course a rental now, and Bayou Town. Well, I've seen some new car deals and different things that they went out of town. You take like the Bowdens, different ones, they've moved out of town. Barnes Motor Company moved out of town. These are just things I remember, you know. But over the period of time, though, we've had quite a few changes, I think.
What's the best one that's occurred?
Well, I guess the best change, you mean, would be, I think the sewer plant is one of the biggest things, because in those days we used to have open ditches and everything like that. I've seen the time when you could look outside and tell when a person was washing, because you could see there was soapy water going down the ditch, and it's been a lot of changes.
And what about the worst change?
Well, worst thing, I don't know. I don't have too many bad things, I don't think, to happen. I'll tell you another good thing, though. Today, they put that promenade down there at the park. I don't know whether you're familiar with it or not, but that's really a major improvement. That really is nice. How it goes around in front of the Chesapeake or the Bayou Hotel, and then over to the lighthouse, and then they're going to continue that, I think, some way. So that'll be another nice thing.
Well, what was the best thing about your growing up here and living here, your lifetime? How many years?
Well, I just like I like the area. I like the people, and I have never had any reason to want to move away or anything like that. I mean, we always were able to make a living, and really, I've of course, my wife and I, we have four girls, and we've always had a we've been married 54 years.
How'd you meet your wife?
Well, her mother run a store, and through the little old store, that's how we met.
Which store was that?
She had a grocery store, her mother did.
And what was the name of it?
Well, Norrie's Grocery, yeah.
And did your wife used to work in the store there?
Uh-huh, yeah. Cindy worked in there, and then I would go in there, and eventually we got married. But we've had a good married life. Good. Very good. And I'm proud of all my children. My one daughter works in the hospital. She's been there about 25 years. My other daughter works for the government. She's been there for 29 years. And I have one girl. She lives in Ohio. And my other little girl, or I say my other little girl, my youngest girl, she usually stays right here with us. She's upstairs, you know, they have an apartment up there.
So do you remember any other stories from your childhood about growing up here and living here?
No, there's probably many, but I just, right off the top of my head, I just can't come up with. But I got some literature here, as I told you. If there's anything that I missed, why, I don't know what it would be. But I kept those things all those years back, and different things that happened to me. And well, as I said, the old sewer plant began to... We actually had elections that were lost on account of the darn thing. Because we wanted to put it one place and they wanted to put it another.
A big controversy.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big controversy.
Oh, yeah, my land was really tough.
Well, that seems like a good place to stop.
Yeah.
I meant to ask you, and I forgot, how did they cut the ice off the river? Can you sort of walk us through the process of the...
They had some kind of big blades like knives, you know, and they had horses. And they would run these around the ice and cut out sections of ice, and then after they cut out certain sections of ice, then they would get this together and narrow it down so they could put it in these buildings.
So how did the horses were dragging the
yeah,
knife?
Yeah, would cut the ice, yeah.
So they would walk the horse out onto uh-huh. the river with the knife dragging, is that
right.
what it was?
Right, mm-hmm. That's when you cut it.
And then how did they move the ice blocks out of the river?
Well, they would pick them up and then they would drag them across the ice and then put them in these sawdust houses.
Using the horses again to drag the ice
yeah.
cubes across the
yeah.
frozen river.
Yeah, that was quite an operation, and my father used to talk about it all the time. And they would keep that, mind you, till summer. It was thinking, you can just imagine now how they had to watch that in order to be able to keep it, mm-hmm. so they could use it.
Well, do you remember anything else about what your father said about the ice business?
No. They had all kinds of buildings that used to have up there in that general area. And then I remember when they were working in the ice plant, we had great big cakes of ice. They would put these things probably 50 or more down, and then he would fill these big cans up, just the same size as a block of ice. And then when they got ready to after they manufactured that, then they would lift them out of there and take them over to a chute. And then they would shoot these things, these 300-pound cakes of ice, down this chute. And then they would store this in the warehouse.
They would, what was the purpose of the chute?
Well, because it was up in the air.
Oh, I see.
And then they would take these cans and bring them over to a chute. And they put them in that chute, and then they would water it down, and as soon as it broke loose, it would go down the chute, and then they stored it. Yeah, it was a real, real neat operation.
And when did the ice houses go out? Approximately what year?
Oh my, we're going way back now. It seemed to me that I would imagine in the 40s. Because we used to hang around up there to the ice house, and Lord, we were only about 15 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah, I would say in the 40s.
And then what did your father do?
Well, Dad, he went to work on the railroad, and my father was a crane operator. And then we had some trucks, as I told you. And what we would do, when he would come home in the evening, we would take these trucks and haul different things for people, like moving, or we would even haul cross ties. And people around here would burn a lot of wood, and we would haul these cross ties, and these people would pay for the cross ties. But that was a great thing then, as far as wood burning. People burned a lot of wood in those days.
Well, thanks again.
Okay.